You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, our guest tells us about federal funding limits on research into the impact and causes of gun violence.
First, amid the ongoing opioid epidemic in Wisconsin, a new report finds that drug users make up the bulk of arrests for drug-related crimes in the state compared to drug dealers.
And we'd like to hear from you. Have you or anyone in your family gone through this in Wisconsin? What do you think? Who do you think the police should target when it comes to drug-related crimes in the state? You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or leave us a comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Keegan Kyle joins us now. He's an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He wrote this report. Keegan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Keegan, I know you like to track the data on big news stories going on in Wisconsin. What drew you to this story about drug arrests?
Well, there's been a lot of reports about the impact of Wisconsin's drug problems. It's rising heroin use, rising opioid and prescription drug problems. There haven't been a lot of reports really about what systems in Wisconsin are doing to address that problem. So what I really wanted to examine was, what are law enforcement agencies doing to address both the drug users as well as drug dealers?
And then the statistic that comes up for police agencies is the number of arrests. So big picture, Wisconsin-wide, what did you find when you looked at arrest numbers related to drug crimes?
So the number of drug arrests for drug possession have been gradually rising over the past decade, which shouldn't be a surprise given a lot of other data that's out there about drug use in the state. What is a little more surprising is that the number of arrests for drug sales has stayed pretty consistent in recent years and is actually down from a decade ago. So while the number of arrests for sales or possession have gone up, sales has gone down.
And you talked to people with police departments around the state. We've heard from the Attorney General about these issues. What kind of explanations did you hear for that lack of an increase in arrests for drug sales?
Sure. Two of the most common explanations were that police are going after major suppliers these days, so they are more likely to kind of arrest big fish rather than a lot of little small fish. We also heard that it's increasingly challenging for law enforcement agencies to arrest drug dealers because of the drug trade becoming increasingly sophisticated. In other cases, we also heard law enforcement agencies say that they are having resource problems created by overdose deaths or staffing issues, and that was taking time away from going after more proactive efforts like drug dealers.
So police might be having to respond to so many Narcan calls and overdose calls that they're not having time to perform longer-term investigations?
Exactly. The number, particularly with fatal overdoses, require a lot of investigation to try to understand what happened, and that can take away time from understanding this broader drug network and how it's operating in the community.
We're talking to Keegan Kyle from USA Today Network Wisconsin, talking about his report on drug arrest trends in Wisconsin. As drug problems increase, arrests of users have gone up, but dealers, not necessarily. We're looking for some of the reasons behind that. And Keegan, you talked about the increasing sophistication of the drug dealers and the networks involved in this. It seems like, from reading your report, maybe police were able to get the low-hanging fruit, the sort of unsophisticated person making meth, say, in the backyard or the woods or wherever they were. Those are gone now. Those easy targets aren't there anymore.
Yeah, particularly with meth, quite a few officers that I talked with, you know, said if you go back around a decade ago, Wisconsin was having meth problems, and especially in northwestern Wisconsin. And back in that day, a lot of meth was coming out of home labs or was kind of community grown. But these days, they're really not seeing that as much. A lot of it is being shipped into the state through large cities. In some cases, law enforcement agents said they believe it's coming across the border. But their point is that there are very large operations involved in bringing drugs into the state, and these are no longer kind of small operations that if you were to, you know, arrest a small homegrown drug dealer, that it would have as much impact in the community.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Diane is on the line in Bayview. Diane, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Diane?
Yes, I just wanted to make a quick comment. What I've observed, my daughter is now incarcerated. She's a drug user. She's an addict and on heroin. And these kids or adults are going to do what they need to do to get the drugs, which is steal. And it's easier for the law enforcement to get these people doing those crimes than it is the drug dealer. So they get these kids who commit these crimes, stick them in jail. They're found guilty. They stick them in prison or they're out on bail. And if they don't get the treatment while they're in there, what they need, they're going to come back out and they're going to do it again.
Diane, thanks for sharing your story, your family story. Sorry you're going through this difficult time with your daughter. Keegan, a lot there. First of all, I mean, it kind of makes sense. There are more users, presumably, than dealers. They're easier to find, especially if they're committing other crimes to support their habit. So it makes sense that they'd be, in some ways, easier targets for law enforcement.
Yeah, exactly. I think an important point here is that some places around the state have set up drug courts that are specifically designed to bring people into treatment programs. And there's widespread or increasing recognition that law enforcement agencies cannot just arrest people and send them back to the street and expect that they're going to be better, particularly with drug addiction. You know, I've heard the attorney general say that. I've heard police chiefs say that around the state. I've heard prosecutors say that. I think what's maybe different than a decade or two decades ago is that there was some reluctance in the past to arrest users because people worried that it wasn't really addressing the problem. Now, because of these drug courts, you know, I've heard prosecutors encourage police to arrest people who are just users because then they can steer them into drug addiction programs.
Diane, thanks again for the call. And a hope, I guess, in law enforcement would be that if you arrest the user, you can get information about their dealer and then kind of work your way up the pyramid. That's easier said than done, it looks like, from your writing, Keegan.
Right. So the Attorney General and other people have told me that the way drug networks are designed these days is that a lot of drug users don't really know much information about their drug dealers. And so even if they wanted to cooperate with police and provide them information, there isn't a lot of information for police to really go on there. So it can provide these frustrating blocks to really understand how these drug networks are working.
We're talking to Keegan Kyle right now about his investigation into why the state is arresting more drug users over time while arresting fewer or the same number of drug dealers as in the past. He's an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin.
And you can share your thoughts by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think of users facing more arrests than dealers in some cases in the state? How do you think law enforcement should handle these crimes? Has anyone in your family experienced this? You can call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 to join the conversation.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
We're continuing our conversation about drug users bearing the brunt of arrests compared with dealers in Wisconsin. Keegan Kyle is with us. He's an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network Wisconsin, and he's been following that story.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think the state should prioritize? What do you think local governments and police departments should prioritize when it comes to drug law enforcement? Is this an issue that's affected you and your family, your community? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go back to our callers now. Michael is with us in Duluth, Minnesota. Michael, hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Michael?
So I work as a correctional officer, and I see it time and time again that the drug users who are in their 20s or even 30s have very little to zero motivation to stop the bad behavior or to get out of that environment. And it's not until they reach their 50s, pretty much, when family members start dying, they realize how much they're losing by focusing on drugs that they even make any changes in their lives.
Well, do you see any interventions where you work, Michael, that might help, given that you see this lack of motivation to change?
I do see some. There are drug treatment programs inside prison. There are, church groups and whatnot that come and volunteer. But the ones that do take advantage of those, once again, they're older, or they're doing it almost purely for the reduced sentences from it.
Michael, thanks for the call. And Keegan, I don't know if this kind of data was there with the drug arrest numbers you were looking at. Do we have any kind of age breakdown on what we're talking about here?
No, the data that I have doesn't look at age, but one kind of related data set is looking, that I mentioned in the story, is looking at hepatitis C infection. So years ago, hepatitis C was this bloodborne infection, this virus that was predominant among people, above age 30. But there's been this surge of new infections among people in their early 20s. And health officials predominantly attribute that to rise in drug use and particularly sharing needles. And it's become a huge problem in the state that health authorities and also some correctional officers are now trying to deal with this year.
Thanks a lot for that call, Michael. We'll go next to Don on the line in Madison. Don, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you think, Don?
So I am a recovering user, and it took me a long time to get sober. I ended up going to prison for about 2 years, and during that time was offered very little treatment to have options out or to help me find sobriety or get out of prison and actually be able to live a life. Luckily, I was able to do that. In the end, near the very end of my sentence, I did some sort of treatment in prison, but it's you have to get a lucky card to be able to get into that kind of stuff. And the prisons are so overcrowded that you have a very little chance of getting in there. And if you do, it gets taken away very easily.
Don,
luckily I was able to get in.
Don, thanks for sharing your story. I hope you hold on to that lucky card for a good long while. Keegan, as you talk to law enforcement officials and others, is that part of the story? Are they talking just about who are we arresting, or are they talking more about what happens? Do they have options after they're arrested?
Yeah, they're both talking about both of those issues, particularly with these drug treatment courts are designed at kind of the local level to steer people into treatment programs. There are also now new programs at the state prison level that are trying to help people with treatment recovery. I'm not too familiar with it, but I believe there's a Department of Corrections program that is helping people really at the process at the end when they're about to be released into a community to help them with addiction and to find more stability as they head back out into the community and more independence.
Thanks a lot for that call, Don, and good luck to you. Keegan, I want to get into a couple more points in your reporting before we're done. You looked at Wausau and saw that it's kind of an outlier in some ways to some of the trends around the state. What did you see there?
Yeah, Wausau is really interesting in that their police department and some of the surrounding agencies have really seen a rise in arrests, not only for drug possession, but also for drug users. They've been very aggressive. According to their arrest statistics, over the past 3 years, they've made more drug arrests for possession and sales than they have in the previous decade. And what's really interesting about them is they believe it's working. They've received a lot of praise from the community that what they're doing is making a difference. But like other parts of the state, they're still seeing problems. And they would take a heroin dealer off the street and see that person in the drug market kind of replaced by a meth dealer. And so they're constantly having to kind of respond and react to the shifting community.
And they're fighting economics there in some ways. You write that we're in a more saturated community that's had a long time heroin problem. What might sell for $10 in a place like Wausau with less competition might bring in 5 or 6 times that much. So there's kind of a natural draw for those dealers to be replaced as they're arrested.
Right. And I heard that similarly for not only Wausau, but other kind of smaller cities that you might not expect to have a lot of drug activity, but they do in part because dealers see that as a lucrative market with less competition.
I guess a big question here, Keegan, as we start to wrap up, you talked about the increasing sophistication of people dealing mainly heroin and meth, doing things that make it harder for police to track their networks and arrest them. Do law enforcement officials see light at the end of the tunnel? Are they going to be able to keep up in this kind of arms race with the people they're trying to arrest?
Well, the Attorney General and others really encouraged the need for additional resources. The Attorney General was approved by the state lawmakers to receive four new drug agents this year to address drug trafficking, but he told me that that would not be enough to address the problem, and he would advocate for more. Similarly, local law enforcement agencies said that they don't really see, they still see continuing problems, I guess is their big point, and that this is something that is going to require continuing attention.
And briefly, as we wrap up, Keegan, what unanswered questions are you still hoping to find data on?
Well, I'd still like to learn more about those big dealers. Who are they? How often are they being arrested? How much impact are those types of arrests really having in communities?
We'll leave it there. Keegan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Keegan Kyle. He's an investigative reporter for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He joined us today to talk about his recent report looking at the rates of arrests in the state when it comes to drug-related incidents. We've heard some stories from you on the air. You can still share your stories. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know how this issue has affected you, your family, and your community.
The Toronto-based company Aquila Resources plans to mine gold, zinc, and other metals in Michigan upstream from the Menominee River. So far, the mining company has been able to obtain nearly all the permits needed to move forward. As the project nears final approval, Danielle Kading reports on the tension it's created among residents along the Michigan-Wisconsin border.
On this Friday evening, cars honk in support of protesters who stand on a street corner in Menominee, just across the border from Marinette. Dale Burry of McAllister, Wisconsin, is among them. He's president of the newly formed Coalition to Save the Menominee River. Burry says the Back 40 mine poses too great a threat to the region's economy, environment, and public health.
My land is 228 feet from the Menominee River, and so we would definitely be affected.
Tina Lesperance of Stevenson, Michigan, stands nearby in an outfit resembling the Grim Reaper. She's holding a sign that says cyanide kills. The chemical is used in a diluted form to extract gold from ore as part of the mining process. Lesperance says that's just one reason she opposes the project.
I'm very fearful that the Menominee River will be poisoned with acid mine drainage, which is actually sulfuric acid. It'll kill the fish, it'll kill the birds, anything that comes in contact with it.
Protests like this one have been held outside the Ogden Club in Menominee since the spring. Lesperance says they gather here because of the club's ties to the mine.
The people that own the Ogden Club are investors of the mine, and there were also employees that worked for Aquila. So we want to bring awareness to people that this business is behind the mine.
Inside, customers chat over drinks and food. Ogden Club co-owner Robin Quigley recently retired as a spokeswoman for the mining company. She declined to comment on the protests. Quigley says she and her husband Tom own a fraction of the company's shares and have leased space to Aquila for meetings about the project. Waitress Jennifer Dulick says the controversy around the mine has ruined a lot of friendships.
I have a lot of friends that are protesting right outside here while I'm trying to work and make money and support my family, and it sucks, I guess.
Dulick says she made roughly $700 a week in tips last year. Now she says she's lucky if she can make half that.
We've had a few employees like walking down the street, coming to work, wearing our Ogden Club shirts and yelling stuff at us. No Back 40 mine, and just kind of being rude.
Several customers at the Ogden Club say they would support the mine if it can be built without harming the environment and public health. They say the project would create hundreds of mining jobs, millions in tax revenues, and help stem the region's population loss. But the mine is so controversial here that supporters declined to speak on tape. Aquila Resources spokeswoman Shantae Lassard understands their silence.
They don't want their businesses, for example, to be protested at. I think that once we get all of our permits, you will see a lot more visual support for the project. But right now, people just want to stay private. They don't want the attention that this project brings from those who oppose mining.
The company just resubmitted its application for a wetlands permit to Michigan regulators. Aquila's Lassard says they hope a final permit will be issued to them in January. But protesters like Tina L'Esperance hope Michigan's Department of Environmental Quality will reject it.
And if they don't, we're not going to stop. We're going to do everything in our power to stop them.
With so much at stake, emotions are running high. One man driving by the club screams at protesters to get a job. Later in the evening, Ogden Club co-owner Robin Quigley reads a retirement card she was given by mine opponents. Inside are snide remarks like rest in peace, spelled P-I-E-C-E, and worst of luck. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up later on, WPR reporter Bridget Bowden spent nearly 6 months embedded with a class of recruits at the Madison Police Department. Her documentary, New in Blue, looks at the recruits, their training, and the people they'll be policing. You can listen online at WPR.org/policeacademy.
And coming up next hour on Central Time, we'll have our next installment in our week-long series, First Wisconsinites, Dispatches from Native American Life in Wisconsin Today. Our focus today is on the arts, including writing for young adults and music. You can find archived interviews, articles, slideshows, and more from the series. Just head over to WPR.org/first.